and it's about 9:25 p.m. Sitting down, taking a look at my RSS feeds for the night. What I will do is throughout the day, I've got my RSS feed on my iPhone, my news aggregate, that just whenever I get, you know, maybe every hour, a couple of hours or so, when I get a moment, I'll take a look at the RSS feeds and see what is being compiled, and I will favorite or save some of the more interesting ones, and I pass those along via Twitter or do what I'm doing right now and talk about them over Audioboo, because there's some really interesting ones today. On Gizmodo, there's an article about a brain-computer interface that's rather cumbersome looking. It's sort of like a shower cap with, I'd say, a good 100, maybe 200 electrodes connected to the outside of it, connected to a gentleman's head who seems to be sort of meditating as he's staring at a pinball machine. And clearly what's going on here is he is using his thoughts and the brain impulses that the headset is interpreting to play the pinball. Quite fascinating, actually. So that's on Gizmodo. Interesting question I saw here on UFO Mystic. The question is, what would it take for you to believe in UFOs and aliens? Just a bit of a poll here. Flipping over to the website. Again, that's UFOmystic.com, one word. It says, I know it isn't a scientific poll, but I found it interesting. The people turned off by quacky experts is only around 17%, and I have always said that it isn't the big problem some make it out to be. The author says the largest group, 37%, will only believe if they see one with their own eyes. 11% won't believe even if they touched one. It says they would assume it's a midget in a rubber suit. Then there would be 34% that are convinced UFOs and aliens exist. Of course, the poll numbers, she says, will probably change as time goes on. That's interesting. That's a good question for everybody, actually. What does it take for you to believe in UFOs and aliens? The interesting thing about that question is it's not as straightforward as you may assume. If you're not someone who's very familiar with sort of the whole UFO paranormal pool, this is a question I've always found more complicated once it's unpacked than sort of the person on the street really thinks. There's a few sort of signposts, a few indicators that I've always taken as being what the average person would expect to qualify as actual proof of the existence of UFOs. And what I've found is that most of my criteria for what I believe people would take as actual evidence, a reason to accept that it's not fakery and streetlights and that sort of thing. Most of these things have happened, actually. But I believe that the will not to believe is stronger than people give it credit for. I think most people believe that they would be rational about it. But it has a way of sort of working around rationality. And I mean that in both ways. I know I'm rambling a little bit. I really didn't sort of prepare my thoughts on it. But, you know, I think people want a UFO to land in the White House lawn. They want the president to come out and say that there are aliens on the moon or aliens visiting the White House or something that dramatic. I believe it's safe to say that nothing of that sort is ever going to happen. Or they secondarily would expect some very high-ranking military person to come out of the closet, so to speak, and admit that they took part in this, that, and whatever. Ironically, this has happened several times over. There have been quite a few very high-ranking military that have said exactly that. But again, it's not as it is not as straightforward as people think it would be, that, you know, certain things would happen and that would be a good reason to believe. As this particular article said, even if they touched one, they would assume it was a midget in a rubber suit. That's kind of funny. I think the whole UFO issue is more complicated even than the UFO people think it is, but that's just my personal opinion. Over at KurzweilAI.net, Accelerating Intelligence News, one of my very favorite websites, there is an article about touch screens that touch back. It's from Technology Review from today. A new haptic interface that creates a sensation of a physical button when the user touches the screen has been designed by a California-based company, Immersion. The device uses piezoelectric actuators that generate rapid horizontal vibrations to create the sensory experience. So there's basically a little vibration that presents itself as a physical sensation. Pretty interesting. That's over at KurzweilAI.net. The sound of silence. And this is also at KurzweilAI.net. Absolutely fascinating story. Silent Sounds, a new technology. This is from March the 2nd, by the way. Silent Sounds, a new technology developed by the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Monitors electromyographic signals from lip muscle movements and transforms them into a computer-generated voice for the listener at the other end of the phone. Applications include helping people who have lost their voice due to illness or accident and saying a PIN number or password silently to evade eavesdropping. Looking over at the actual article, that was just sort of the summary. It's kind of amazing, really. I'm reading through here. Native speakers can silently utter a sentence in their language, and the receivers hear the translated sentence in their language. It appears as if the native speaker produced speech in a foreign language. So it's very much the universal translator from Star Trek. And speaking of which, from Disinformation, the author Ralph Bernardo, smartphones may one day be universal translators. In science fiction, characters often turn to a portable universal translator to help bridge the linguistic divide, either among humans or with other aliens. But the concept doesn't just exist in the imagination of Star Trek writers or the pages of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Researchers are actually closing in on the technology to foresee an application in the coming years in a very familiar device, the smartphone. Imagine walking into a restaurant in Beijing, ordering off the menu, and talking with waiters in Chinese. It's a future that is on the way to becoming a reality. Fascinating. That's, again, from Disinformation, disinfo.com. And finally... Well, actually, two more quick stories here. Here come the sunspots. Very happy to hear this, actually. For a while now, we have been experiencing an extremely low sunspot activity period on the sun, which is incongruous with where the sun should be. The sun should be ramping up into greater and greater sunspot activity. Why is this important? It's because sunspots, scientists believe, have very strong influence on Earth's weather. The last time we had a very low sunspot active period was something called the Maunder Minimum. It was essentially Elizabethan, around the period of Elizabethan Britain, if you can imagine that. It was extremely cold. We went through what some people sort of classify as a miniature ice age. This seems to correspond with very low sunspot activity. So however it works, which we're not quite sure, the fact that we have had very, very low sunspot activity for the last year, a couple of years, I believe, is rather significant in terms of what our weather is doing, which you must admit we have had shockingly strange winter. Very, very cold weather. Well, anyway, here on disinformation.com, they have an article. Here comes the sunspots. February 2010 was the first month since 2007 with sunspots every day, according to spaceweather.com, for February the 27th. A quick check of February 28th confirms the streak. So far, there have been only two spot-free days in 2010. By comparison, there were 260 spot-free days in 2009, and there have been 772 spot-free days since 2004. What this means is that it's one of the quietest periods of solar activity in recent history, and it may be coming to an end. So that's a good thing. Staying in space, at Gizmodo, 600 million metric tons of ice found on Earth's North Pole surface could be enough to supply a space base. Around 600 million metric tons of water ice were discovered in shadowy craters at the moon's North Pole. How much is that in terms of... how much is that, it says, in terms that mean something to you? Possibly enough to sustain a mother effing moon base, that's how much. Now, that's quite a bit of water. That's really a great find. That's what's in my RSS feeds for this evening. There's actually a lot more, but I'm stepping all over my own voice tonight. I've got a little cough, and it's taking quite a bit for me to restrain myself. So, talk to you tomorrow.